Welcome to Studio 1776. I'm your host, Daniel Leach. I'm joined here by Robert Tanner. And Robert, can you give us a little bit of a background of who you are and who you represent and why you're here today?
Bonjour. Good evening, or good afternoon, shall I say. Comment ça va? Now, I am a Baptist minister. I am a priest of the kingdom of Christ, or kingdom of heaven, in its essence. You got to understand everything. If I'm going to talk to you, I'm going to talk to you on the spiritual, level, and I'm going to talk to you on the physical level and the mental level. Anybody who rejects or doesn't want to understand all three isn't what is referred to as holy. You have to be a whole person. You have to understand and deal with all three parts of your personality because we are Elohims. Okay, a lot of people like to use that word and say it's God. God is a made-up word, all right? There is no such a word as a God. God is a generic word that the pagans put so that they would not have to call out the true name of Yahshua or Yahweh, all right? So we are Elohim unto ourselves, but we're not the Elohim, okay? But we are created in his likeness. So we have a lot of power. And once we understand and start building our Elohim as stronger, or making sure that all three of our parts are strong, then we become stronger. So when I speak to you, I'm going to speak to you on those levels. I'm not going to be hokey, but I'm going to also get into the man part, okay, the physical world. But first, I'm going to talk about, you know, a little bit on the spiritual side too. And what gives me the authority to speak and be able to be a leader is first I was dedicated at birth in the form in the fashion of the Old Testament by my parents. My father was a priest as well, a lifelong priest for the Kingdom of Christ, a Baptist movement. And then I was saved at age 10. So I look forward and I look backward in faith that Yahshua died for my sin. I knew that, so I had to have something that paid for my sin debt. I have to have something that writes off my debt. And I'm going to show how this also works in the world where you can create, like I have, $100 million bond put in and underwritten by the treasury. And we can see an example of this when Joseph went in and paid for Yahshua to the church, which was the court. All right, so this is something that the father should be doing for every son right off the get-go, but we've lost the knowledge. It is the lack of knowledge that enslaves Yah's people. Okay, so I was saved. I look forward in faith, or backward in faith, and I asked that the debt that he paid on the cross be his atonement for my sins. I was sincere about it. And then I was baptized into the kingdom of Christ when I was 13. And that was way too young, but that's what I did. And, you know, you got to be careful because once you get baptized by a true priest, things are going to change. And, then when I was 30, I remember I ran for sheriff, and, I went through Katrina. And it really affected me to see the corruption and what they had done in the lives and that they had just taken from the corruption. And I said, everything that they had taught me was a lie, you know, because I'd owned a franchise. I'd owned the largest chemical applicating franchise, lawn doctor in the state of Louisiana. I was always wanting, you know, to build and be an entrepreneur. This was my drive, you know, and then I realized all that could be taken from you with just one accusation in these so-called courts. And so all my work was taken over, you know, again and again. I'd get a little fire and they'd come along and they'd piss on it. And they would say, oh, that's just a law, nothing you could do. And that wasn't me. You know, you don't come and piss on my fire that I'm trying to keep warm, keep my family warm. All right. So that upset me. And I didn't know how to handle it. And I didn't like to be upset because that brings anger and that can bring destruction to me, not to the people that I'm being angry at. So I remember being in church and I asked the prayer. I asked the Lord, you know, I'm being beat. It's like I'm fighting in the dark and people are punching me and I can't see where the punches are coming. Will you show me and give me the Holy Spirit of wisdom and knowledge. I can know what's going on in the sense of, as Isaiah, chapter 11, the seven Holy Spirit powers has promised us the priesthood. And I remember a voice coming to me, it's my own voice in my own head that said, you haven't stepped forward and become the priest that I've asked you to become. And why would I do this for you? And I remember thinking to myself, well, you know, what am I going to have to go? He said, I'm going to bring you to the valley of the shadow of death. And, for you to learn this. And you have to accept that you're going to have to walk in that valley in order to learn this. And I accepted at that time, and I stepped out of my pew. I went forward, and I volunteered, and the church chose, you know, I'd been an example for many years there, leading the song choir, and they knew me, and they laid hands on me, and they sent me out as a minister with that anointing, all right? So why as a priest, I wanted to stop injustice. I didn't want to kiss the baby and pass the plate. That wasn't the priesthood I was called to. I was called to another order, and Melchizedek. And so I ran for sheriff. I only had $500. I stopped the guy from winning. That was like, you know, 70% chance to win. And while I was doing that, grandmothers was coming to me and saying their children were being abused by the mayor of Ball and by the chief of police there in Lecompte. And so I went to the FBI, I went to the state troopers, and they said, no, the hell with you, you're a liar, And now here I am running for sheriff, and they still wouldn't, you know, take a criminal complaint against these people, and wouldn't listen to the multiple witnesses that come to me that was credible, that said, hey, they got this woman, they got a warrant out for the husband. They got the mother, the wife on, hooked on meth, making her prostitute. And while she's out prostituting, the mayor of, and chief of police are, and other, chomos are there home alone with the 8-year-old girl. And that's what they were doing. And I couldn't get them arrested. Well, a burden put on my heart. And I said, I went to Hawaii after that. I didn't win the election, of course, but I kept him from winning. And, I went to Hawaii to learn law, and I studied law there, and I was able to bring a claim. Charles helped me with that, helped me get in touch with the FBI agent, and I was able to bring a charge against the mayor of Ball, and they arrested him because it had to go through Washington, D.C. down to Louisiana. The FBI in Louisiana wasn't able to protect him, and within a month they were arrested. He was arrested for having the meth lab, the chief of police, but by the end of the evening he was retiring. And then he rolled over on, they accepted a plea for FEMA, and they ended up doing 5 years. Now, you know, clandestine labs actually 10, you know, so they got off real easy, but they also arrested the chief of police the assistant chief of police for forced raping 2 14-year-old boys in Lecompte. They were never prosecuted. Okay, this is the kind of chopo we got of these chomos over here, and they are human traffickers. All right, so I went to Hawaii. I met up with a Charles W. Brooks, and I was studying there. Charles and I, we were the ones that forced Countrywide into bankruptcy. Charles was a military man. If you ever seen Men of Honor, you've seen the first black man to become a Navy diver. Well, Charles W. Brooks was the first black man to break the glass ceiling and go as high as you could as a diver and become a medic diver. All right, so he was behind lines in Vietnam more than anybody else. And he was behind, the whole time he was in Vietnam, he was behind the lines, all right? He was one, what was, would become the Navy SEALs. He was like one of the first, he was what would eventually become what would be the Navy SEALs. So he's very honored and very respected, and they were still in this proof that he was paying it. But they had a thing called foreclosure by action, where you didn't get a judicial hearing. And at that time, and they were using that as a weapon against anybody that was not Japanese, all right? And if you was white, black, they were, you would stay about 2-3 years. If you did anything they didn't like, they would just take your house and kick you off. And there was nothing you could do. And, of course, now I learned how to beat that. And I actually did a constitutional challenge against that. We beat that and overturned that. There is no more judicial foreclosure by action there in Hawaii. But what happened was we went up, we found Charles had come over to a place. I don't know if you remember the guys, Roger Christie. And Roger Christie had this little movement, and he was listening, and we were all working together to pass what was called the Friendly Skies, which was the first bill that was passed that legalized cannabis, or should I say herb. I don't like to use the word cannabis or marijuana, because those are slang terms. Yahweh said herb, and it was good. And so you always want to use that term, because that's definitely what it is. Those other terms, those are just slang names. So I was there studying, and we were getting that bill passed, and really learning about activism and learning international law there at the university, and with the different people that were there that really were very knowledgeable in the Kingdom of Hawaii. And so what happened was I was amazed, because I said, okay, because Charles was telling him what was going on. Hey, I'm losing my house. And he had been coming to some of my religious organizational meetings. And so I asked, when Charles left, I said, what are we going to do? Would you like for me to start organizing some people, maybe? And I remember Roger saying, oh, no. Now, after he had done said, oh, yeah, we're going to help you. We're going to do. After the minute he left out the door, he was like, oh, no, it's done. There's nothing we can do for him. I looked at him. I'm like, man, you just lied to this man. And it just revolted me. And I got up and I left the room. And from that moment on, I really started seeing Roger for what he was. And Roger was an agent. Roger was a information gatherer. He had been trained, come to find out, he'd been trained by the military to do exactly what he was doing, which was getting people's information of who were the growers throughout America, and then turning them over to the police where they were being prosecuted. And so I chased Charles down. I had a little friend that had a car. We went driving down the road. I seen him walking down the road. He was walking down to the, he said he was going down to the courthouse. I said, hey, pick him up. I said, let's give him a ride, because it's a good long way. And this old man. And so he got in the car. We went down. I said, hey, look, I'm gonna go in there with you. I'm gonna help you. I have some knowledge with it at the law library. So we went in there. We're just searching now. We're trying to find anything that we can do to freeze this, you know, the sale of this house by Countrywide, and that they were going to have on the courthouse ground. It was on a Saturday. Well, it was on Saturday or it was on Tuesday. I think it was on a Saturday. And, anyway, it might have been on Tuesday. It's been a while. So we're sitting in there, and a page from one of the judges came, and he left a piece of paper on our table where we were at, and he walked out. Well, Charles picked it up, and it had a statute in it, HRS. I think it was a 33-something, 33-3, I mean, something like that. And it said, a private organization cannot collect, you cannot collect a private debt on public courthouse ground. That's what it said. On public ground, put it like that. You can't open a private business out in front of the courthouse. You know that. I know that. Unless you have a permit, okay, from the comptroller 14 days ahead. Well, there's a private organization called Countrywide that had been auctioning off these properties, collecting private debt for years, and they never had gotten a permit. And we went down there. The Kingdom of Hawaii made me the sheriff over the Kingdom of Hawaii. We notified the sheriff that we're going out there to come out there and watch what we're doing, and we're going to stop the sale. And I went out there, and it was only me and Charles and my girlfriend videotaping it, and the sheriff and one of his deputies, and the couple of bankers. And I remember he was Japanese, and I, you know, look, I was raised in the Japanese dojo. I was NCAA Karate Do Southern Champion. So I respect Japanese on a level. I always had that respect, because I was growing up with that respect. I was trained by sons of samurai. If you, seen Karate Kid, the old man that actually did the, karate was actually, his dojo was in New Orleans, and he was the one that actually tested me. And so, I had this respect for, Japanese people. But when I got to Hawaii and I seen what they were doing, they were dishonorable, even in the Japanese code. And I had no respect for these people. And I remember presenting him the paperwork in front of the banker for Countrywide, in front of the dealer. I said, we're ceasing this today, and you're not going to be auctioning this. And he goes, he looked at it, he put it down. He said, we're having this auction today. You know, and there's just this real cockiness, you know. And I don't know, it's something about this, because my grandfather, Clifton Meadows, was one of the few men that made it off of Iwo Jima. It just, oh, how dare, you know, this Japanese man going to tell me what's going to happen here? You going to commit a crime in front of me? And man, my head, they went back. And I remember when it came forward, there was a different angel. And I started laughing at him. I mean, just deep belly laugh at him. And when I finished laughing at him, I pointed down to him. I said, you see that black spot on the concrete? I said, you arching off that old man's house, that's where your forehead's going to be. And I remember looking up, the deputy started coming at me like he was going to do something, and the sheriff stopped him because he knew we were operating in the law. And he knew what backed us up. And he stopped him. And when that Countrywide manager seen that, he knew he was in trouble. And I already had a reputation that I was a serious guy when it came to, you know, I had some people try to attack me, and, you know, I walked through them like water. So, anyway, he pulled out his phone and he said, we got a problem. And they didn't have another auction for 2 years. We got a TRO against Countrywide the next day, and or that first day that, you know, we had the ability to go into court. And the very next day after we got the TRO against them for violating that statute, they went into bankruptcy. And it was because they had no protection for all those unlawful auctions that they had been taking part in to try to protect them. So when I came back to Louisiana, I started the first private group. You know, this knowledge really wasn't out there. I couldn't find anybody here on the, what is called the mainland, wasn't out there. And, so I started a group called the Knight Sovereign, SOVERIN, Diplomatic Mission on Facebook. And man, bro. I started talking about how these were, you know, these courts weren't real and things like this. And man, the FBI came after me. And the FBI agent, and the state trooper that refused to investigate that eight year old being molested, and arrest those, they were the ones that came and brought a charge against me as a sovereign citizen. And I was the first person. But I was the first real person to be prosecuted under that guise, under that make-believe name, because there is no legal definition for that. But what they really did was, and of course this is understanding, you know, my studying, I understood what they really were doing was they brought me before a Catholic War Council, okay? In 1919, and Rob Ryder, Lewinsky, and I guess that's his last name, Robert, he and I have been studying this together for a while. He did you can look up one of his videos that he did with some of my material called The Denominational, I do not agree with him on the point that he states that the Catholics are a part of the General War Commission. They are not. Okay, the Catholics were given the Catholic War Council, and they were given a commission book, about 250 page book, and they were given a gold fringe flag, which is the Army Regulations flag. This is Army Regulations 840-10, Chapter 2. You can see that only about six groups can use this flag: retired general schools, Army barracks, and Army missions can use this flag. So it's very five. So, but there's two Army missions. There's Catholics, and then there's all of the others. All right. And at that time, there were, they did not call us Protestants at that time. Okay. Actually, the Protestants was part of the Catholic organization. They was the Baptists that had, which made up mainly of the General War Commission. Now, each church under this commission has the ability to have a denominational war commission. See, because we're still under martial law, because both martial law was called out by the president, Lincoln, and by Congress. And it specifically says Congress created an act called the Lieber Code to govern the martial law. And under Article 2 of the Lieber Code, it says that there must be a president must end it by a proclamation, or the Congress must do a treaty of peace to end it. And of course, neither one of those have been done. So we're still under martial law. And while we're under martial law, what the land that you're standing on is referred to as a theater of war. So there, and all constitutional rights, habeas corpus rights, and all civil law has been suspended. Everything is operating right now under the laws of war, okay, and under military law. So once you understand that, it's so much easier. It starts becoming fun, because before I was trying to play chess and learn all these rules while they're playing checkers on me. Telling me to crown them. You know, I'm like, what just happened? You were not supposed to be able to do that, make that move. And they're just laughing at me because they're not telling me the rules. They don't have to. It's like me going out there thinking I'm playing cricket and they're playing football. They're just beating me to heck. You know? And if you got to know the rules. So once you learn the rules, what game you're playing, it makes it a whole lot easier to win. And that's the reason why they have a 98% win rate, because people are going in there thinking they have to argue a case. First of all, you're being brought in not by a court. You're being brought in by a Catholic war council. They're saying that you're Catholic. Because if you have gotten a driver's license, you are working for a Catholic organization. You are a registered receiver for a Catholic vessel, which they created for you at birth, for you to be able to operate on the Holy See, okay, the imaginary sea. And the crown under the Paris Peace Treaty has all the admiralty rights here on this so-called continent. So that's the reason why they're doing this private admiralty gig going on. All right. But that's not an admiralty flag. That's a military flag. All right. So you can't have a military flag and you can't be civil and military at the same time unless you are a civil affairs officer. Now, the only civil affairs officers that you're going to find is under the Wartime Agencies Act. Our wartime agencies of the church document, and you'll find that on page 154. And it says that we, the General War Commission, in which I am the secretary of now, we have reactivated it. We have the ability to first to meet and talk about the work that we need to do. That's number one. Two, we are to go to any agency or agencies that have work that aren't being done and suggest the work that should be done. All right. Now, the agency and agencies make up everybody in the United States. Okay. So we're over everybody. All right, we can go to any agency that's not doing the work that they're supposed to be doing, and we are to suggest that they do the work. Number three, we are to assist them as best we can, and we are to do the work in as best of a cooperative manner as possible. Okay, so, and then fourth, we are to help the post after we come out of the war for everybody to get back into the regular groove of civil, the civil order, the way it was supposed to be to begin with, the way it was before they put it in the martial law. And this, how to do that is under, you can find that under Army Regulations FM 27-5. I would suggest reading that. FM 27-10 will show you how to become a protected person under military law and how you are to be treated while you are a prisoner of war. Now understand that if you do not know that you're on a theater of war and you think you're a civil activist, they can claim that you are an unlawful belligerent combatant. And we can read about what they can do to unlawful combatants in the 2006 Military Commission. And once they, all they have to have is one meeting, all right? It's called, they call it, you know, the first one you go to, are you guilty or are you not guilty? How do you plead? All right? How you plead is going to make a big difference, because if you plead to them, now you've done put yourself under their authority. And you have claimed that, one, that you're not, you haven't claimed that you have military status. So they can claim you. If you don't claim that you have military status or a protected person under that, you don't even get Geneva Convention rights, and they can treat you like those boys at Guantanamo Bay, and you never get out. They don't have to have no hearing. They'll keep bringing you forward to pretend like they're having some bull malarkey. But really what they're holding you as is an unlawful enemy, belligerent combatant, and you're screwed, blued, and tattooed. Okay? Now, when they arrested me, what happened was, because I was innocent, now I could have beat it, and the Lord, and I was shown that. I mean, I had it beat. It was so easy to beat. Because all the judges who were claiming I put the liens on would have had to come up and testify, and they couldn't have done that because they would have had to operate in the private. So this boy, he was going to drop it. And I've beaten a bunch of charges like that by forcing certain people to come in and testify, like the comptroller. That was one of the persons I said, hey, I sent a registered letter to the attorneys that they forced on me, that I said, hey, I want these people to testify. And they freaked. And then they started pushing for the plea. They started torturing me. All right. We won't go into all the ways that they did that, but I basically said, okay, the Lord came to me and says, I want you to go into the fits. I want you to witness something from me. And it was something in my heart, because I had a strong angel that came to me and said, you can beat this, man. This is easy. I just beat the murder charge. He says, this is Mormon's country. There ain't no way they're going to convict a Baptist minister for helping out a woman. And they had just arrested they've gotten on a fake DWI, and they've taken her kids and done all kind of stuff. Well, they had just arrested the deputy for writing 10 that I had come out in the public notice about. I had come out in the public notice in the public newspaper saying, hey, they're abusing a woman here with fake DWIs. Well, they couldn't remove that public notice, so they said that was a lien. And they came after me, arrested me, said I did fictitious liens against judges. All right. And I did. I didn't realize I had. I was like, I didn't do no lien, but I didn't realize I had put every one of those judges' bar numbers on there. So all their bar numbers had been frozen until they took it off. And so there was a lot of power that I had that I didn't realize that I had. Same thing. So I'm going to go over with you, the powers that I had, the powers that you have, and exactly how to operate them, all right, and how to operate them successfully against these criminals, or against these enemy combatants, or against these unlawful enemy belligerent combatants. You can call them spies and saboteurs. I would suggest reading the 2006 Military Commission. I would also suggest reading the laws of war, especially chapter 4. Where it talks about spies and saboteurs. That's what they are. This is a foreign organization. The bar is a foreign organization. If you go on the Knight Sovereign Diplomatic Mission, you can also look up the Army for These United States of America. That's another group where I have a lot of the military side stuff on it. but you can find the W-9 for the Judiciary Branch of Louisiana. And it says, doing business as the Louisiana Supreme Court. Well, I don't read anywhere where the Judiciary Branch doing business as the Louisiana Supreme Court has the ability to do jack, squat, diddly, what, all right? And they don't. And up at the top of the W-9, it clearly says taxpayer identification. Well, if you go to the IRS, if you just Google IRS government information letter, you're going to put up a page that on the fifth paragraph, it states that you must, an organization, in order to become a political subdivision or an instrumentality of government, must have a government information letter from the IRS. And there is a fee attached. And then if at the bottom of the page is a 1-800, 1-877 number. If you call up that number, they're going to tell you the fee is $27,300 that an organization must pay the IRS to investigate them to find out whether or not they have one of three sovereign powers. They have to have either tax exemption, they have to have policing powers, or they have to be found that they have eminent domain powers in order to get that. None of these organizations have that letter. So all of these organizations are what is referred to by the IRS as a private utility, all right? And the only tax-exempt status they have is on gifts, okay? And so they're claiming everybody is giving these people their gifts. So one of the main powers you have is to file and let the IRS know that these people are committing tax evasion. Mm-hmm. And that helps to shut down the money to them. All right, you do a 1099A, you do a 8832, you do a, 1096, and you want to mail a hard copy in there to them. And you want to do a 1099OID. I mean, I have how to do this in the files. Some examples. I don't like to teach. I'm not a tax deal. I say go to the H&R Block. Tell them that you want to file this. And if they don't get you to the top person for the state that can do it, then you bring a claim against the to the H&R Block group that's refusing to help you. And you might have to do two claims, but eventually they'll get you to the top IRS guy that will help you. Now, hopefully they'll help you like the woman did with me here in Louisiana, and kind of teach you how to do some of this stuff on the IRS side. I will tell you what she told me, but I cannot give legal advice. I cannot give tax advice. I can only give spiritual advice and tell you what I found to be true. Okay, so this is, if you get involved, hey, look, this water's deep, and once you start swimming, there ain't no stopping until you get to the other side. So that's the heads up I gotta give to you. And the other side is on the other side of the River Jordan, okay? And, so once you get in this water, there ain't no stopping until the Lord, calls you home. And so, because you will be an executor, but I will try to teach y'all some stuff as we go along. I don't know how many interviews we're going to have because this is not a 5-minute conversation, but today we're going to talk about what to do if you are taken hostage, by one of these foreign countries or by the Catholic War Council. See, because the Catholic War Council does not have the authority to hold hearings, what they have done is because the Baptists have abandoned their duties, all right, over the years, because they thought at the end of World War One, well, that was the end of the war. So that was, they discontinued. Well, the Catholics and the Jewish organizations discontinue theirs, but we discontinue ours. And by doing that, what they did was they took over our organization's responsibility. So they're actually holding these tribunals in which the commissions, only a commission has the, a war commission has the ability, or a military commission has the ability to do, not a war council. The war council does not have the ability to do what they're doing. That's why they can't get the documentation of tax-exempt status, okay, because they're not supposed to be in there. But what they're doing is they're doing private business, okay? So the first thing when I go in there, The only they don't bring me in there. I'm on the do not touch, do not talk to this guy. And I have no worries no more. There's not a court around me right now that wants to touch me with a 10-foot pole. And the main reason is when I went into the feds, I knew how to do grievances, all three grievances. You have three grievance process where it went all the way to Washington. And man, I went in there and I was the cop. And I was like handing out, I was popping grievances on them like it wasn't nothing, man. I was handing out tickets. Oh, you just violated your, because I knew the rules. I went into the law library. I found the rules for how they were supposed to do this, this, that, and then they didn't know the rules. So every rule that they broke, I wrote them up. And by the third time, it took 3 months. First one went to the admin. Second one went to the warden, and the third one went to Washington D.C. And whenever it goes to Washington D.C., their insurance go up. So they would come to me and try to make deals with me to not let it go to Washington D.C. Why? They didn't make no deal. So they stuck me in the shoe, and I kept writing them up. Well, they tried to torture me. So they brought me, and they kept moving me around. In two-man cells, but they'd keep us three men in there. And they wouldn't let us out. Well, they kept moving me around, hoping they could get somebody to beat me up. And like I already told you, laying hands on me it's easy to lay hands on me. With sticky hand, it's hard to get your hands off of me sometimes. It's easy to put your hands on me. Sometimes it's hard to let me go. So, that's just the way it goes, you know, and I play with people. I don't like to hurt people. The Lord bless me. I was trained by Jay Bear, Grandmaster Jay Bear, so I'm able to be as gentle or as rough as I want, but I can just play with people, and it's my playtime. So, and I laugh while I'm doing it, you know, so, they just left me alone, and they couldn't get me beat up, which was amazing. I guess they never had, you know, it was like, whoa, what's going on with this guy? So they decided to do the next thing that they do, which was they brought me and these two Mexicans that I was in there with, they brought us in, and they said that we all were going to trying to commit suicide at the same time. And they put us in this big room, this big window where they usually strap you down. I'm surprised they didn't do it by myself, I guess, because they were wanting to piss them off and try to get them to beat me up. So he came, here comes the shoe, the second lieutenant. He sticks the paper clothing into the shoe. He says, y'all put those paper clothing on. We said, nah, we ain't putting nothing on. Well, he walks across the floor, gets a big old can of industrial strength, mace. I mean, this is a good 12-inch can by 3 inches wide. And he opens up the deal and says, I'm going to empty this can out, and then we're going to come in and we're going to beat you, and we're going to put those clothes on. Well, man, I started stripping down. I was like, no, because I knew they weren't checking. All right, so I stripped on down. I don't care. All right, you want to see me? All right, here you go, swinging around. And so I started stripping it down, and we all put our clothes on. Well, when I wrote up the grievance on that, I had just so happened the Lord had put a very powerful, powerful, powerful tool I'm about to teach y'all. Anybody who is in, man, I'm about to teach y'all something, bro. You ain't never heard this. Nobody knows this. I'm the only one that teaches this, and let me tell you, it works. And it's called, I had found when I was in the Oklahoma transfer station, they had this little newspaper when they stuck me in the shoe. And it was talking about the new law that had been passed in 2000, I think, I don't know, 14 or something like that, 12, 14. And it was called the Prison Rape Elimination Act. And, ooh, child. The prison later, oh man, the Prison Rape Elimination Act is a doozy. Now, once a prison rape or assault or an abuse has been brought against one of these workmen, it has to stay on their record whether they found guilty or not guilty for 5 years after they quit or 5 years after you're released. The person who wrote it is released. And so I didn't know that much about it because I really hadn't studied it in the law. You know, we didn't have the ability at that time. I was being moved around and I hadn't had the ability to really have law library time or a good law library, federal law library, like I would later. But I said, I think APRIA had been violated in this. And I wrote to my senator saying, I think, you know, I sent a copy of it to the senator, not my senator, but to the senator. This was Bitter at the time, And man, all of a sudden, I'm taken out of the, my deal I'm brought before. I'm thinking they're wanting to talk about the torture, because basically what they did was they put us in paper clothing. They all put us in the room, and they turned down the temperature down into the 40s, and they let you sit up there and shiver, all right, for a week. And they let us out while I was talking about the torture. Well, I said, and I think they may have committed a violation of PREA. Well, because I mentioned PREA, they had to bring in a PREA coordinator. And I'm thinking they're talking about the torture. And she goes, I don't think you understand. Says, I'm a PREA coordinator. I'm here to talk about your allegations of PREA. I said, well, look, I don't know PREA. I said, I haven't been able to read it. I said, I read a little bit about it. I said, but the fact that they stripped all three of us naked in front of each other, forced us to be naked in front of each other. I said, I don't think that was right. I said, I don't know. And she goes, whoa. She says, you were forced to get naked in front of other inmates? I told her, I said, well, it's on the video. He said, yeah. And she was like, uh-oh. And I could tell it was all of a sudden she got real serious. All of a sudden, and she went from sitting back to now she's leaning forward. And she's full. I got her 100% attention. All right, and they brought out the, and it was not only the second lieutenant who was the head, but it was his four or five head guys that were standing around with him. So they brought out the two, they brought me back, and they brought out the two other guys one at a time, took their interview. That by that afternoon, all four of them were out of the shoe. And the low little nobody, the little gopher, that had, you know, that was, they used as the gopher going running around. He was running the shoe. So that's how powerful this PREA is. They will remove them immediately. All right. Number one, guess what? It says under exclusions, number 10. All right. And I have a video. You can find this under a Don L on YouTube called How to Stay Out of Jail 1. Okay. And I go over the PREA. And I go over this specifically where I show you in writing where it says this. It says that only the medical staff can do frisk downs or use electronic devices to check for the safety of the facility. Now, a facility is described as any place that has a holding cell or hold prisoners. So that would include courts. Okay? And this would make sense, because while they're frisking me down, a guard can tell whether I'm missing a piece of my anatomy. And sometimes they would make you strip down and bend over and show you the old brown ugly at them. You know what I'm saying? I even had a mother freaking spread my cheeks apart one time trying to harass me. This is called sexual abuse, because now they do not have the ability to do that under the law. All right. That's a PREA charge, all right? It is only the medical staff, and it says the only way that even a guard can even be present while you're being ran through one of these machines or fist down or searched is if you've been accused of raping another inmate. And, of course, nobody ever is, and they're doing this all the time. So the first thing if somebody has called me to help somebody, the first thing I do, I don't want to hear about the charge. Because the charge is meaningless. Okay? It doesn't matter what they charge. They don't have the authority to charge them anyway. So it's meaningless. That's like fighting over, that's stupid to argue over what the charge is. But the first thing I ask is, has somebody frisked you? Has somebody stripped you down? Have you had to go through a metal detector that a guard was looking at? And they say yes, always, because they always do. I said, okay. And then I get on the phone and I start bringing PREA charges. Not against the person who did it, but against the warden and against the PREA coordinator. And that's the end of their career. All right. Because and of course, now I'm in the halfway house. I've done my time. I'm in the halfway house. This is about a year and a half later. And because I didn't get very much time. They wanted to get rid of it was just hey, take the plea and either do 25 years or through 3 years, which I'd already done almost 7 months. You know what I'm saying? So it was like I wasn't putting my neck at hoping I was going to get a judicial process from these people, because I knew I wasn't. So I said, oh yeah, I said heck on it. And the lawyer already said, hey, I want you to witness. I want to be able to give these people the maximum amount of punishment for what they're doing, and I need a saint in here that I can bring them before, and I can have them testify on Judgment Day. That's the feeling I had, and there was a promise, a spiritual promise that was placed in my heart that if I went in there, he was going to teach me something and show me something that I would never have to go back again. And this is one of the secrets that he taught me that I'm sharing with you now. Okay. And it's called the Prison Rape Elimination Act Exclusion 10. And, it is that only the medical staff can frisk you down. And if they don't, they have sexually abused you and they have taken on full liability. And these people do not have any indemnification. They don't have any bonds, which means as an adverse party, once I put a PREA charge against that worker, I get to have somebody go down to the county or a parish, look up everything that's under that person's name, and I get to put a security interest. I don't put liens because it's unlawful to put liens on public servants. Of course, they're not public servants. They're private servants according to their W-9s, and you should be getting the W-9s for all the clerk of courts, for the judiciary branch, which is the Supreme Court, and for all the organizations like the sheriff. You should have all their W-9s. Because that W-9 is what you're going to use to file your 1099-A to get your money back. Because they're going to pay you for being in there. All right, now the IRS is not paying right now, but that's okay. It will stop them from getting paid. Okay? So you're going to want their W-9. Now you don't have to have their W-9. But it's better if you do, and you have their exact name. Okay, so how you get a W-9, you call up the clerk of court, or you call up the person and say, I'd like to speak to your fiscal officer or your financial officer or your CFO. And you don't talk about that. I need to speak to them about private business that has nothing to do with you. You know, and what's the name and what's the number? And they'll give it to you. Once you talk to the financial officer, said, please email me the W-9. Here's my email. Can I expect to receive that today? And, you know, just act like it's a normal thing, and they'll send it to you. 9 times out of 10, if they don't, it's non-compliance against the IRS, and you can go down and you can put a security interest in their house, the financial officer's house. What I do is I do a non-UCC claim, and that is I write a kind of claim. I affirm to the best of my knowledge, or yay, the following is the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth to the best of my knowledge without the United States. And there is a deal where you can actually find on the United States code of how to do it. Definitely want to do it without the United States. But either way, any of those right there would do. You put it down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. These are my claims. And then I claimed the case. I put a secure as an adverse party on this date. You did do this. I do claim that that it did cause you this. I do look forward to bringing you into a judiciary hearing or into a military tribunal, into a subsequent judicial hearing, whatever you want to put that, so that you're saying, I'm going to give you due process, but until I give you due process, because you don't have a bond to indemnify your action as an adverse party, I'm going to secure all your unsecured securities. And I have found these to be your unsecured securities, your bar number, your house, your bank account, your VIN number. Okay. And I mail that from myself to myself, in the old blues men kind of copyrighted way. I pay for it with international stamps to show that I'm not a domestic, because domestics don't have the right to do that. And then I go and I go to the secretary. Now I have a registered postal number to show my claim. Now, I can have that mailed from a notary back to the notary as a third-party witness. I can have that as a third-party witness individual, a living woman, or I can have the postmaster do it. Okay? Now, I would all – so I don't want to get, let's finish off one thing at a time, because there's a lot of little secrets I won't try to teach you, like martial arts. All right. So now that I've made their claim.
So hold on one second before we go forward. I just want to let you know that we have about 5 minutes left in this segment. So if you want to put a cap on what you've been talking about, then we could start a second segment in more details.
Okay. Well, all right. So once you mail it off to yourself, you write to them and you say, hey, look, I got you by the short hairs. If you don't release me, if you don't do this, if you don't quit harming me and impersonating peace officers, impersonating this or impersonating that, I will publicize this in a legal newspaper. Legal newspapers you can find, real cheap ones, and it doesn't matter where you publish it, whether you publish it in one state or another, it does not matter. But you can publish it. You can find a good legal newspaper, or you can go to the Minnesota Secretary of State website. At the top, it's got a search engine. You put legal newspaper. It'll pop up where there's like 250 of them. And you just call them up and find out, hey, look, I want this publicized for 30 days. And I want it in all, when you Google it, it'll pop up. And you find the one that'll do it and use it for 30 to 40 to 45 bucks. And bing, bang, boom, for less than 50 bucks, you just put skin. See, they have no skin in the game. Why should they release you? They have no skin in the game. Now they have skin in the game. You're the only ones putting up surety. But, you see, they don't have the ability to get a warrant because under Title 44, it's only political subdivisions and courts of records that can get a warrant. And they're not neither one of those. They got government information letter to be one of those. So that's not what they're getting. They're not getting a warrant. What they're getting is a writ of attachment because they're putting a lien against a thing, an all-capital name. Okay, not against you, the living man. They don't need a warrant because they're not coming after you. They're holding you because you're the registered receiver for the organization. And under Rule 19, whoever is the registered receiver for the organization must be adjoined to the party, and they're holding you a surety. Okay, so that's another thing. Go do an assumed name. You know, and put the Secretary of State as the registered receiver. Put the postmaster as the registered receiver. Change your post address from the birth certificate hospital to the postmaster, your local postmaster, and send it to the Postmaster General in Washington, D.C., registered, paid for with registered mail. He's going to send back a letter saying that is your address. And guess what? He's going to address you as president. Now you are the president of the organization. You can put that in as a record, and that judge can never assume or presume to be able to be the executor over the state or the estate. And these are some of the things, if we have time, that we can go over. I'm going to be teaching you in more detail of how to do this, and these are very powerful. And now when you go in there, excuse me, you gave me the warrant. That's improper service. Is there anybody in here willing to testify that I'm the registered receiver? And also, number one, once that prosecutor states that he's the prosecutor for something or an objection, hearsay, I see no evidence in the way of a power of attorney, or a registered power of attorney, or a contract showing that what his statement that can support his statement. I need him to be sworn in to cross-examine him. All right? That's another killer that they hate right there. But you do not ever talk to the judge. You look at the, unless you don't have an attorney there. If they've given an attorney over the defendant, that's awesome. You look at him. And you ask the court if they've given an order placing you as the attorney on record for the defendant. Oh, they have? Inform the court that I accept it. And that I give you a order of instructions that you're to raise no controversy, that you're only to accept and to bring forth the instruments and the bonds for my authorization. You will never go to jail. You will never go to jail. The only thing that comes out of your mouth is I accept. Bring forth the instrument for my authorization. You'll never go to jail, man. Or if you say, hey, I'm a private, or I'm a captain, or I'm a whatever in the Continental Army, and I demand a trial by court martial, because what is that gold fringe flag doing in here? What is the Go Friends flag doing in the tax examiner's office? What is the Go Friends flag doing in the building? What is the Go Friends flag doing isn't that an army flag? How are y'all a military and civil at the same time? And you're going to see them freak out. And, you're going to blow up their prosecution. Plus, you want to claim that case number. You want to claim the case number. You want to claim your name. You want to claim your social security number. You want to claim their name. You want to claim their bar numbers. You want to claim their houses. You want to claim their bank accounts. You want to notify the diocese and the bishop and claim the diocese property. All right. And give them a choice. All right, I conditionally accept that I have to be the surety for this estate or this person on the condition that I get to take everything that you own, including your body for 7 years, and you work for me as a indentured trustee. Now, I need to teach y'all how to do a bond. Y'all need to learn how to do a $100 million bond, put it in, getting underwritten. That's not real hard. It's pretty simple. Y'all need to learn how to do... there's a bunch of stuff I can teach y'all along the way that's just going to make y'all powerful, real powerful. And I hope we had some fun. I hope y'all had some fun with me. I know I covered a lot of information and talked a lot of stories, but I hope y'all had a little fun with it too.
Robert, excellent. I think this would be a great time to take a break, and then we could come back and do part two, and I'll introduce you, and then you can basically name that part two topic, and we could start fresh. Do you want to take a 5-minute break, and I will give you a call right back?
Yeah, that'd be fine. Like I said, I gave you a basic, I tried to cover a general cover over everything, so I wasn't able to really get into some details. Hopefully, maybe we can start going into more details, and that way people, now understand, you will never know it all. It takes faith to step out, all right? If you're waiting to know everything that it is to know before you do anything, you're never going to do nothing.
Right, correct, absolutely.
So, but yeah, that sounds good. Let's have us a little prayer, because none without prayer is worth the doggone darn.
Amen.
Heavenly Father, you've been so good to us. We just bless you. We thank you for these challenges. We thank you for these things. You know, we ask you to make us and mold us after your will. But we hate it when the finger gets stuck in us. I notice around. We hate it when the old nasty rough stuff is shaved off of us. These people are actually working in your will. I bless these people. I ask them to be blessed greatly. I do not send them curses. I ask that what I'm doing to them will help them, that not only will they be better people here in this world, but in the next. And we ask this in your loving name. Yeshua, Jehovah Elohim, my Yahweh, may it be. All right, my brother.
Amen.
Yes,
all right, Robert, I will give you a call back, and we will pick this up. We'll take a 5-minute break, and then we'll get into the details of what you're talking about.
Sounds good. I'll let you know.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you shortly.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.